Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
This is Life and Art from FT Weekend. I'm Lila Raptopoulos. We're here today to talk about plants and gardening in the winter. You've probably noticed that it's only gotten trendier over the years to have plants in your home. I've definitely noticed that. But the Financial Times' gardening columnist, Robin Lane Fox, has always known that plants are cool. He's been writing this column for 53 years. Robin is also an esteemed professor of classical history at Oxford University. That means he lives in Oxford, so his specialty is the UK climate. But don't worry, we're going to talk about gardening all around the world, too. Robin, welcome to Life and Art. It is such a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
So I have many questions for you, some of which I've crowdsourced from our listeners and colleagues. But before we get into the advice, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about your garden. I'm sure you have a lovely garden outdoors. Do you also have plants indoors?
I do. Yeah, I'm a great killer indoors. I have responsibility for two gardens. One of them I call the Kissing Fields, which is the great gardens in New College, Oxford. That's 9 acres. Anyone can come and see them any day for a fee. And I think it would be agreed they are the finest college gardens at the moment in England. And at home, I have 2 acres of very cold ground, which I feel puts me in touch with many unfavored readers. As for gardening indoors, none of you has killed as many plants in the past 65 years indoors as I have.
That's a relief.
you will have killed the same percentage, but I actually admit it. And I've learned which ones are the quickest to die.
Okay, great. I'm curious first, what's your approach to winter gardening anytime? Like, do you feel like the winter is a time to take a break? Is it a time to, I imagine, let the soil rest? But what is your sort of general philosophy?
I love the winter gardening in Britain now, but I time it and I have to rely on weather forecasts. Yeah. I do urge people, don't just say, I will do my garden next Thursday. Have a look and see, because Thursday may be such diligent rain, there's no point in trying to work outside in awful conditions. Choose a good day, lay that one aside, even if it's a bit later than the books say. And then winter gardening is one of the greatest pleasures. The world is quiet. You can begin to see the framework of your garden if it's quite big like mine. There are a few birds clucking around, usually other people's pheasants on the run from being shot. And you are able to think clearly without a rush. What is it I want to move? What are the effects I'm looking for? And the underlying structure shows so clearly.
Yeah. Let's talk about outdoors first then, Robin. I know you wrote in your last column that your approach has changed this year because it's warmer in November. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I will. I mean, winter gardening is the great gainer. There are very few from global warming, and it's the great gainer in Britain. You absolutely have to think now of all you can have in flower from early November to the end of January. And it's quite amazing. So what would I tell you to do? I'd tell you to look carefully at the following things. The winter flowering cherry, Prunus subhortella autumnalis. That is the greatest of all flowering trees now in Britain. What a wonderful thing. It will flower often from November right through to the end of March.
Brilliant. Okay, so as you begin to recommend your flowers, I'll just say I will put these plants in the show notes so that listeners can look them up afterwards. So first, it's the winter flowering cherry.
Yeah, you go for the winter flowering cherry. Then you look in the family of viburnum shrubs. White-flowered viburnums, any of them is good. Viburnum bodnantense, Dawn is pink, Debon is white. They are wonderful growers and very good to pick. But above all, you look, as you never have properly before, at particular hellebores. Not the Christmas roses, which are quite tricky, and I now see them on sale, God help us, for £9.90 each. It's ridiculous. £3.20 would be about right. Go for the Lenten roses. This is my best tip. And if you can, find named hybrids, either the Ashwood varieties, or I like best of all, the Hervington, H-E-R-V-I-N-G-T-O-N hybrids. Now, these are almost indestructible plants, and they used to flower in March.
That's amazing. You know, we had a lot of listeners that had questions about what sorts of herbs or vegetables they could plant outside in the winter, like which vegetables could tolerate frost.
Well, I mean, it's a bit late, old boy, then, or old lady, in your query. The one thing you can usefully do in Britain is actually to plant garlic. Curiously, garlic can be planted almost at the third week in November. But otherwise, your cabbages, your Brussels sprouts, which I absolutely love, they should all be coming now into harvest. And you really wouldn't get anywhere by trying to transplant or sow vegetables for winter into the ground now. That is a huge mistake. Of course, when you get to early March, that is a different story. But for the moment, either you grew those cabbages on in spring or you won't have any.
Right. Great. One reader, Ida Tuononen, who was writing from Tokyo, asked, what plants would winter or overwinter well on the balcony in a pot?
Are we talking in Japan?
In Japan, yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. It depends if there's very heavy snow. And really here, I am not speaking as a Japanese expert. But one wonderful choice in Japan is the Hepatica family, H-E-P-A-T-I-C-A. There is a superb book that you should get by John Massey, My World of Hepaticas, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. And he's worked closely with Japanese growers. He describes everything, how you don't need any heating. You can have these plants on shaded balconies. And in the spring, you will suddenly get these marvelous blue, pink, white flowers. They are miraculous. That is one of the great books of the millennium.
Wonderful. I'll put all these suggestions in the show notes as well for listeners. What about for people who are in the cold, like people who are in the northeast of America or in New York? What advice would you give, for example, for a balcony in New York?
I have a firm advice to everyone who wants a garden living in New York. Move to Britain, or if you want to be in the EU, move to the south of Ireland. My heart goes out to you, you poor gardeners trapped in a high rise. But you have one great resource, the New York Botanical Garden up in the Bronx.
This is true.
Fantastic to see the indoor orchid show. But even the great gardeners there know they cannot really give you a wonderful show of outdoor winter flowers. The climate just is against it. So on your balcony, you are not going to get beautiful flowers for January, February, but you might have tried a few bulbs in pots. If you bought some paper white narcissi, you have the option of moving them indoors, and they are really, really good value. Of course, you've missed the chance in September of putting your own bulbs in cheaply, but if you see pots of them being advertised online, get them. They're marvelous value. They're scented, they're white, they stay in flower, they're so beautiful.
Amazing.
And if the weather turns horrible on the balcony, bring them indoors and they'll be fine there too.
Perfect. Amazing. Okay, now, when it comes to indoor plants for the winter, I think maybe inexperienced listeners and readers might think that the indoors doesn't change that much from summer to winter. But of course, at least in New York, I know we have less light, the temperature changes, the heat goes on, it's often a much drier environment. Do you have one big piece of advice for indoors in the winter, or are there a few things that we should really look out for as a
Well, my first piece of advice is don't worry, you'll kill it. The point is treat them as extended florist flowers. And I think the great family to go for now are the Phalaenopsis orchids. They are the most resistant to changes of temperature and to you being away for 4 or 5 days over Christmas and not watering them. They are fantastic value. And I think they have some hope of surviving the New Yorker's habit until recently of being overheated.
Right. Olga Shemaine in Sweden has a question that is actually an extension of this one, which is, any good suggestions for indoor plants in dark regions that aren't orchids? I have loads of orchids, but some of my other plants are really suffering through the low light.
So what I would say is cyclamen are damn difficult, but beautiful. Azaleas tend to lose their leaves. They will last longer. Poinsettias are much easier to keep going. White jasmine doesn't flower long enough, but is very difficult to kill. But my number one, even to the lady with all the orchids, whom I really admire, be sure you've got plenty of phalaenopsis. That was what I would go for.
Okay, brilliant. So one thing I'm noticing in your response is that most of these are flowering plants. And Robin, I've been noticing that there's this huge, you know, of course, boom in younger generations that are getting really into indoor planting. And they're growing fiddly figs, monsteras, pothos plants. They're calling themselves plant daddies. they're using apps. I imagine you're happy to see young people interested in gardening, but I'm curious how you feel about the trends and what we're doing right and wrong.
Yeah, well, this is all, of course, wonderful. I sometimes feel that it's gardening for control freaks. Do they really love plants? Maybe they do. But could I urge a close look at cacti? Now, I can't, I'm afraid, go into the details of cacti. It's too difficult just on a single phone-in. But the cactus is a really, really pretty thing, and it's a very good plant. And then really on all the others, you know, the eucalyptus plants, the ficus, and all these other things, I have a very simple answer. The FT will have to have a parallel gardening columnist. We need one of these young people who loves growing what I call non-plants, really likes things that look artificial. And we could have one called Answering Back to Robin every Saturday, where somebody who is brilliantly expert describe why, heaven help us, she likes sponging her plants' leaves. there must be more to do in life than that. I'm not an expert on this style of gardening, and I'm really delighted people are coming into it. But what I most hope is that it will fire them up to get further into gardening more intimately related with the surrounding nature that we all visit.
So when you say that, what do you mean? Where do you want us to go from the non-plant?
Well, this is what I think. You know, I mean, you're all going to complain. I hate skiing. I cannot think whoever took to skiing, but I respect anyone who loves it. And I feel that you're skiing over usually swathes of the most beautiful early summer flowering plants. So go back to your ski resorts and climb in the Dolomites or wherever you like, the Pyrenees, or wherever you want. Adirondacks would be good. And you will see the most wonderful sway still of wildflowers at higher altitudes. And that is a life-changing experience. It will change possibly the way you think about gardens, and it will get you off just sponging the leaves of an aspidistra.
Right. So you're hoping that that will sort of inspire people to go from just growing leaves into growing flowers?
Well, I mean, I have to say, I'm not hoping. I know it will. All these leaf spongers are wonderful people. And they're longing, really, to take leap into something that's more beautiful and more rewarding. And I'm sure they will. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I love that. I hope that's true. You are also giving me courage to plant more flowers indoors.
Something I'd like to emphasize. You are at the moment in Britain living in the golden age of winter gardening. It is crazy to plant the surroundings of your house with nothing for these wonderful 3 months that unfortunately climate change is giving us in our tiny little patch. Everywhere else, climate change is a disaster.
Right.
But in British, Irish, North French gardens, it's wondrous. I love it.
Robin, you know, I've been thinking about your career and how interesting it is. You are not just one of the UK's foremost gardening experts. You're also by day an academic. You're an expert in Alexander the Great. You wrote a book called The Invention of Medicine. I'm curious about, you know so much about history. For centuries, we have kept beautiful plants. And I'm kind of curious why we do it.
Ah, yeah, well, of course, there are two things. You left out my current best-selling book, Homer and his Iliad. And in fact, in Homer, there are imaginary gardens of the mind, the great gardens of King Alcinous. Not even in the next life will I visit them, but they are quite brilliantly described. And my point is, here we are in the 8th century BC with the greatest poet in the world imagining this wonderful garden all beautifully laid out, and it haunted subsequent imagination, because that's the point. You can plant and garden just practically, and I really respect that. But if you also look at it through the eyes conditioned by what other people have seen in flowers, gardens, and so on, you see whole layers of association. The more educated you are, the better you are at two things: garden plants and falling in love. And that should be made absolutely clear. The more you've read, the more interesting you are. So my two professions don't pull against each other. And of course, plant names are in Latin, but they've developed very early in my life. Really, I'd say both of them from the age of 9 or 10. You read endlessly in the FT counseling on how to change your job and how to retire and how to fiddle about. Well, I've done exactly the opposite. I've done exactly the same thing in very different ways for the past 60 years. And I'm damned if I'm going to change.
I love
it. My God, I've had a life. So my advice is find what you can do and just do it. And if you can't make money, you may well make money by doing what you're good at.
Love it. You said before we got on that this is your 53rd year writing the column, but you're just halfway through. Is that right?
Absolutely right. Yeah. Maybe I'm going to have a midlife crisis next year.
Well, then we hope to have you on much more often. Robin, thank you so much. This was an absolute delight.
Okay, well, thank you. And just please, everybody, winter garden. And if you can't under a snow blanket in America, just switch on and think of those of us who can.
Thanks again, Robin. This is wonderful.
Thanks so much.
That's the show. Thank you for listening to Life and Art from FT Weekend. I really recommend you take a read through the show notes. I have links to every plant and garden that Robin mentioned. I also have discounts for a subscription to the Financial Times. And we have ways to stay in touch with me and with the show, whether that is by email, on X, on Instagram, etc. I'm Lila Raptopoulos, and here is my talented team. Katya Kumkova is our senior producer. Lulu Smith is our producer. Our sound engineers are Breen Turner and Sam Javinko, with original music by Metaphor Music. Topher Forges is our executive producer. Cheryl Brumley is the global head of audio. Have a lovely week, and we'll find each other again on Friday.